Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Family Business Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Business Radio Studio X, Radio X Studios, I should say. And I just want to remind those, we have many listeners who are regular listeners now, but for those who this might be their first time tuning in, Family Business Radio is here to showcase family businesses and build a community. It's designed to educate, inform, and support family-owned businesses. So each week our guests will include family business owners, key executive non-family business members who are helping to drive those businesses, and the trusted professional advisors that assist them. I'm Pat Romboletti, the co-host, and with me is Meredith Moore, my co-host.
Hey, Pat, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
Good. I'm actually really excited about the show.
Tell me about it.
I'd be happy to. I was reading the bio of these two gentlemen last week and even got more excited. But today we have an executive coach and one of his clients who will really be discussing the role of an executive that's a non-family member involved in this family-owned business. And then really talking about what role that executive coach plays in that relationship.
Yeah, it's going to be very exciting. It's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. Let me introduce our first guest. He's Dean Harbury. He's an executive advisor and coach with Internal Innovations. Welcome, Dean.
Thank you.
Hey, Dean, tell me a little bit about your background before you got into coaching, because I'm sure that heavily influenced what you're doing now.
Yes, that's an interesting story. I have both some nonprofit experience in my background, but then quite a bit of activity in the corporate arena. And what I did was really took the blend of the two that bent towards social service. And then with the corporate experience, I worked at Bank of Ireland, for example, was a principal at Ronald Blue and Company, and with some of these companies, got that blend of the executive side. And so coaching is a place where I bring both of those together.
Excellent. And tell us a little bit more about Internal Innovations. What's the size of that in terms of the scope of your clients? Are they worldwide? And a little bit about your role there.
Yeah, we do have clients literally around the globe. I just finished an engagement with a client in France, and it's always interesting to hook up over the phone, you know, with all the time changes. And by the way, you got to watch for that daylight savings time switch too, because they do it at a different time. But no, people really all over the world, but of course try and work as much as I can locally to be able to do the in-person work with the executive teams.
Great. And we'll get more into your specific practice, but tell me a little bit, I know you are a professional certified coach. Tell me a little bit about that process and that organization.
Well, thank you. Yes. I'm credentialed through the International Coach Federation, and that's the international body that provides certifications of professional certified coach, master certified coach, and the associate certified coach. And coaching as a profession is very different than counseling or mentoring or any of these other disciplines. I'm not a consultant, as an example. I'm a coach. And with that come professional protocols, and that's essentially the central body that both provides certification and certifies training bodies to provide that type of training.
Excellent. And our other guest is someone who represents that piece of our audience where he is currently a non-family member executive in a family-owned business, Fritz Slaybaugh. Welcome. Did I pronounce that right?
You did.
Ah,
thank
good.
You.
And I know you are a CPA and a CFO and have been in family-owned businesses for a long time, but I also know that you have some very interesting pieces of your background that you've indicated really have had a big influence on your work and your career. Can you tell us a little bit about your years before your CPA?
Yes. I grew up Amish and took over the family farm when I was 11 years old. I was the oldest of the boys, so I guess that's where I got my family entrepreneurial bent at that time. I was the oldest of 9 children. And then at 17, when I knew everything and Dad didn't know anything, I left home and after a couple of years joined the Marines to see the world and be free. And actually, the first, you know, that's where I got my leadership training, official leadership training, and after that went into college, and then there got into the corporate world.
You were in the corporate world pretty deep. When you talk about Arthur Andersen, while they are no longer with us, that was certainly a very structured corporate environment, probably close to what you're used to in the Marines when you first started, but then switched on after that. Tell us a little bit about the rest of your career.
Yes. As a matter of fact, they sold me on Arthur Andersen by saying that they were the Marine Corps of the It was the big eight firms back then. Mm-hmm. And I did my my obligatory 2 years there and then left and got into a privately held company as a CFO and have been in privately held companies, family-run businesses since that time. That's been over 20 years.
Excellent, excellent. Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Dean, can you tell us a little bit? I really want to delve into giving us an overview of what executive coaching, what is all, tell us a little bit about it. Tell us what it is, how it works, and tell us a little bit about your approach and how that's differentiated from perhaps the other thousand of coaches that happen to be out there.
Yes. Well, again, to repeat something I said earlier, coaching is very different than consulting or mentoring or counseling along those lines. And I think the hallmark difference is that you're really partnering with these people to make change. But you think of the typical consultant scenario where they're coming up with what you need to do as a client, and you're telling them all the things that they need to do, and you're waiting for them to work it off. It's really not that way at all with executive coaching. An executive coach is better characterized by the kinds of questions that are asked and the deep discovery process to find what's really on the inside of that executive and really harvest from that person, in a sense, an approach about how to either address issues, correct problems, or make progress in their business, whether it's growth-related or dealing with team-related issues. It's just an entirely different process.
Dina, I'm sure that you encounter this. I've often heard that you know, people think of coaching as, well, I'll bring a coach in when I have a problem. Mm. Is that the way you view it, or does it have a broader scope?
Well, it is true that people think of it that way, but I tell you, the best example I've found is to ask this question, and that is, find me one professional athlete that doesn't have a coach. And do they bring coaches in when they get in trouble or have a problem? Or do they want to get ahead of the curve and beat the competition? And so I say if being an executive is anything like being a professional athlete, you'll get farther faster by using an executive coach.
Yeah. Dean, real quick, too, I mean, how do your engagements work? I mean, are you doing quarterly reviews? Are you always on call to your clients? Do you guys get together every week? I mean, how do you deal with that relationship?
Well, of course, it depends on the engagement. And my favorite engagement is working with an executive team oftentimes in either conflict resolution or team development or finding strategies to grow the business or whatever. But typically, in an individual coaching relationship, I may meet with a client twice a month for a formally scheduled coaching call. But we have access to each other between those calls for anything that may come up, which is what I really like about coaching that's different than some of the other disciplines, because you really literally have access all the time to your coach.
Excellent. Fritz, so you talked a little bit in our early discussion about leaving Arthur Andersen. Tell me a little bit about how you made that first step into a closely held family-owned business, how you found your way there and what your thinking was as you entered.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I saw when I was with Arthur Andersen was that you know, some of these partners that have been there for 10-plus years were still working the crazy hours, and I would leave on Monday mornings and come home on Friday nights. And I had a family, and I didn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And I went to school with one of my friends, and his father owned a business. And so we had actually talked before I graduated. And so it became more and more attractive as the longer I stayed at on the road, mm-hmm. so to speak. And it wasn't really that hard of a step when you're leaving on Monday mornings and not coming home, and the children are asking, who's that coming in the front door? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that moving into the privately held company, even though it was a much smaller firm than what I had envisioned, I viewed it as I can be a bigger fish in a smaller pond and therefore have greater influence. And it was a very unique and good experience.
And so the initial impetus was a kind of a lifestyle decision, and seeing that it would afford that to you, and then it turned into a great experience. And is that what has kept you in that sector for all these many 20 years? It's a long time in there.
I think sometimes I'm typecast more than
that can happen.
No, you know, one of the things in a smaller family-run business is that it's much more fluid, and it's less structured. It's not bureaucratic. And so maybe I'm more wired in that sense. And I like the relational, the family relational aspect of that. I like to think that my interpersonal skills kind of lend themselves to that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that environment where decisions can be made and they can be made quickly, they're much more flexible than, say, a big company. If something needs to happen, it's a matter of getting a couple of guys together and saying, this is what we're going to do. And the owner comes in and puts a stamp of approval on it, and you do it.
Mm-hmm. So really, short of being an entrepreneur, you're having a pretty big effect right there with the people that you're working with, is what I'm hearing.
Yes, yes. As I said, you know, it's just much more flexible. When I say flexible, I guess the time from concept to actual implementation is so much shorter and so much more nimble in a smaller privately held company or a smaller company like that, that you don't have the bureaucratic structure over it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there is in one sense that can be a curse,
mm-hmm.
because you can make bad decisions quicker, less review.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, a good idea is not sat upon for a long time.
Interesting. So, you know, you and I chatted about this briefly, and my experience has been mm-hmm. particularly bringing folks into a financial role, a CFO role, within a family business. You are now assuming oversight to some very personal and confidential information, particularly in that CFO chair. So there's a little bit of resistance typically, and I think the word trust kind of comes up. Talk about how have you gone in throughout your career and developed and won that trust, or what have been the challenges if you couldn't do that? Because it seems to be one of the key things walking in the door.
Yes. I mean, when you get in somebody's wallet, that's when you get real close to their heart.
Mm-hmm.
And being a CFO and being in control of the cash is king. And so when you're in control of the cash, letting go of that control is probably the hardest thing for owners who have that entrepreneurial bent, who've been on their own, have that independent spirit. To let go of that, that is the hardest thing. But usually, you know, as Dean said, that, you know, sometimes he's called in when things are, when they're in trouble. That's usually when I'm called in.
Mm.
And it would be so much easier to come in at the beginning. If you start with the end in mind, then I can help bring order and structure and bandwidth skill sets to an owner that may be really geared towards the sales and business development side, but the internal structure and infrastructure type development is not there. The skill set just isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to give that up.
Mm-hmm.
But you come in and you wrestle with them and you argue with them and eventually you try to make that difference.
Dean, from your coaching, I'm sure trust sometimes is a topic that you're brought in to address.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's just a very big issue for outsiders in a family business. How do you address it with your coaching clients?
That's a great question. I actually have what I call the three legs of the stool, so to say, in building trust. And it involves that integrity side, one. And that's doing what you say you're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Another component in that process are the emotional intelligence competencies. So most times I'm using some sort of an assessment on my clients to determine where are they in the process. So we've actually created a coaching plan around those issues, if there's any perceived gaps in any of these areas, to make sure that the person that I'm coaching is developing a level of executive presence. And the third area really is in professional management skills, and we're not oftentimes attuned to that term. We think of, you know, manager, leader, but I make the distinction between an amateur manager versus a professional manager, and the way those two behave are oftentimes so very different. So we would create an emphasis there in using some of the proper professional management skills and techniques to make sure to utilize that influence process in a wholesome way.
Can you speak more to that? Like, describe more about what that professional management, the core philosophies or those core characteristics entail?
Well, you know, you talk about trust. Think of the corporations that you and I are both aware of, that when something goes wrong, what are they looking to find? It's the culprit, right? The problem person. And so they'll take the track of finding the culprit, find out who that is, and then react accordingly. And basically what we're saying here, that a professional management technique and skill is, rather than focusing on finding culprits, let's focus on finding solutions to problems. And when you do that, you see people feel like more like they're in a safe environment. They're more apt to take risks. And here's the big one. If they're facing an adverse trend, they'll declare them much earlier in the process than if you have a culprit-finding mindset.
Right.
So making sure that there's an understanding of a cultural approach to business is also important in my mind in establishing trust, as Pat had mentioned.
Okay.
Interesting. So, Fritz, you've already alluded to some of the advantages, because there's a little bit more freedom, faster decisions. It's a little bit more casual, less structured, quicker to do things one way or the other. To your point, you can make mistakes, but you can also fix them faster. What have been some of the challenges that you've seen along the way that are kind of a heads up?
Good question.
Yeah. I mean, probably the gamut. And oftentimes, you'll find somebody who has had a business for a long time. They're good at either developing the business. And if they're doing that, they're usually not so good at the internal structure. Maybe a lot of family and friends are in the business, and they're there based on the relationship that they have, not necessarily because of the competencies that they have. And so having someone come in who is more objective and not necessarily relationally intertwined in those relationships can really help a business owner that, you know, secretly in his mind may say, man, I just wish I could get rid of that person, or I wish I hadn't done that. Mm-hmm. When it's easy to go around and say, hey, will you fix that? As a CFO in a family-run business, you wear many hats. Mm-hmm. Finance is just one of those mm-hmm. things. And so that's one of the things that I probably enjoy as much in the smaller family-run businesses is that there's greater variety. Mm-hmm. Soon after I left the Amish farm, and I was working for a couple of years in a trailer factory, and it was the Frederick Taylor type of trailer factory. I mm-hmm. joked that it was the same three screws in every trailer that went by. It just drove me insane. Here, there is no single day or no 2 days are alike. It's you'd never know what you're going to come into in the next day. So trying to be flexible in that environment and to be focused, that's the hard part.
You talked a little bit about, you know, being the outsider, and we talked about trust. How receptive do you find in all the family businesses that you've worked in that they really are with you when you give them financial advice? Here you are, you're an outsider, they've hired you, they've clearly gone through that screening process, they're paying you your salary, and you come in and say, hey, we need to redo X, Y, and Z. I mean, what kind of feedback do you get early in the game?
Generally speaking, you have a six-month window in which you're kind of have a lot of grace to
the honeymoon phase.
Yes, that's right. And so you're the golden boy for a while. And then it becomes painful, because usually what you're in asking them to do is to change the way that they have been doing business so they get different results. And at first it's great, but then ultimately old habits, old patterns come back, mm-hmm. and then that's when integrity and strength of character, those are the kinds of things. Hopefully you can build that relationship up front and the trust up front so that when that tough time comes, you can push through it. It's much like what I've heard, pushing the sound barrier. You just got to work your way through it. You got to break through it.
Hmm. Dean, we're going to talk in a minute more about your specific coaching with Fritz, but to that point, if I'm an executive right now inside a company, and I am pushing water uphill. And I know that I've been brought in with a real, you know, there's been a real goal and objective, and I know that in spite of their best intentions, they're not, I'm being impeded in achieving what they want. For that executive, if that person were to reach out, what advice would you give them in terms of bringing in a coach and assisting in that particular situation? What could happen?
No, that's a great question, because we all get stuck at times in our jobs, right? And part of the job of a coach is to open up the possibilities. So in that circumstance, you know, working with a client in that circumstance, it's like, how can we look at this differently? You know, what is happening right now? What do you want this to look like? Mm-hmm. And what are some practical steps that you can take along the way to make this happen? Now, you understand that in those questions, the coach isn't prescribing the answer. He's using the knowledge base inside the client to really reach for that. But I, and I have to tell you, sometimes it's just a matter of looking at it differently, reframing it. You know, who are the important people here that you need to be connecting with that you may not be connecting with at this moment? Who are the ones that you need to influence around you? And I use that term influence as very different from manipulation, right? Because the dark side of control is manipulation, right? But we're called in these circumstances to influence for right and reasonable things. And so it becomes really more of a matter of a discovery process to try and find out, you know, what needs to change in this game so we can win.
Mm-hmm. You, Fritz, you mentioned wearing a lot of different hats. So mm-hmm. there's some folks listening in today that might be thinking, yeah, I like a lot of this. I'd like to see about perhaps a career in a family business. Give them an idea of the kinds of hats that they will have to wear.
Mm-hmm. Great question.
How about cleaning the toilet? Because your mother doesn't work here, and you know, you walk into the bathroom. I'm not trying to be gross here, but it's, you know, sometimes it's not a matter of pride. It's a matter of saying, I'm responsible here. And or it could be changing a light bulb, or, you know, things that you wouldn't normally do. You don't have the support staff, so you're doing a lot of the stuff yourself. Mm-hmm. So getting a lot deeper than what may be what a person may be used to in a bigger corporation. And also being expected to handle the banking relationships that may go sour, mm-hmm. or IRS issues. I've had incidences where I've come into a corporation, and in order to help cash flow, they've decided to not remit the taxes withheld from the employees. And so, I mean, it's playing Russian roulette with all the mm-hmm. chambers loaded. It's just a matter of when you pull the trigger that it's gonna hurt mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. So. You know, I've been in several situations like that. And what do? You go down there and you face the music. You talk to them directly. So the bandwidth that you have to be able to convince the authorities and the people that are there to down to the least of these, mm-hmm. you have to have that kind of flexibility and not let pride or ego get in the way.
Culturally, I want to talk about something we've talked about in some of our previous shows. I mean, you're going to be, I would think, as a family outsider, you're still privy to some of the family drama, if you will. And how much of that do you typically see or not see in a family-owned business? I think that's a question that anybody that's looking to hire into a family business.
In many senses, it is like getting dressed and going to your second family.
Interesting.
Where you have all kinds of personalities. You've got some people who may be there because they're related to the owner, and they get away with things that the rest of them don't, and everybody knows it, but nobody dares to say anything about it. So how do you deal with that? I mean, what do you do with the person in your, say, in your own personal family that is mama's favorite, but you can't say anything to Uncle Larry? I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, something like that. You just can't say anything about it because that he's the favorite. So how, I mean, it's, I suppose it's similar to like that in most organizations, but in smaller, in family-run businesses where you have a lot less structure, you have more of that, and your interpersonal skills are so key. In you just have to have a lot of grace, and you have to be willing to do more, or hold people accountable if you can. Much like, I look at it like this: in time, everything changes. So you take you just take steps that you can to make the changes that are in your control. Mm-hmm. Kind of like that serenity prayer. Help me mm-hmm. to change the things I can and accept the things I can't and the wisdom to know the difference. That's really what I'm talking about here.
Do you tend to find that being an outsider, there's those issues that you just described where somebody may be looked on as being the favorite or, mm-hmm. you know, they see someone in a role that they think is only there by virtue of birth, not experience. And then you're the executive outsider. Do you find that you're a lightning rod for that outside, for the other folks in the business to come to you with those issues?
Yes. And in that sense, you have to stay focused so you can get your work done. Mm-hmm. Close the door at appropriate times of the day and say, okay, we've rehashed this a couple of times, so what are we going to do about it? If we can't do anything about it, talking about it is probably not going to help it anymore. So let's focus on the work that needs to be done.
Excellent. Dean, do you have any additional advice for, again, other non-family members involved in a business like this to the same point? They're in this kind of situation. I mean, as a coach, what additional advice are you giving them?
Well, you know, my advice would be go talk to Fritz Slaybaugh, in a sense, because yeah. I've sat back and really watched him have an incredible amount of influence in these circumstances. So I think for him, what I see is that his ability to build relationships with everybody there, and to Pat's point about not playing favorites, so to say, I think you have to have a real mindset of equity and justice and what that really looks like. Mm-hmm. And when you do that, you garner the respect of everybody. And I think, again, because I've been with Fritz in several of these situations, the way that he's won the trust and the belief in the CEO or the who's ever running the business and with some of the family members, including the people who weren't, to me, it's a real gift. So I think if somebody's going to work inside of those circumstances, they need to be well aware of what it takes to be able to truly, you know, have those conversations of clarity with people and to build their trust in the end.
Yeah, so you kind of opened the door. Let's open it a little bit wider. Talk about how you and Fritz first started working together, and was it around an issue? What was the circumstances of this relationship beginning?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's always surrounding relationships in some way, isn't it? And let's face it, it doesn't need to be a family business to be this way, but human beings will act as human beings do. And I think someone had asked me recently, you know, who's your target market or who's your target company? I said, anywhere where there's more than one person.
Perfect.
Because, you know, this is what happens. So I think some of the initial scenarios that Fritz got in, and you know what it's like. You're facing the entrepreneurial type, and they're the ones who tend to want to bend the rules. And of course, as a CFO, you're there to keep the rules. So there's an automatic, like, opposite personality and tension there. And I think it really surrounded some of those scenarios. And it's like, well, what do I do here? You know, how do I approach this? And, of course, Fritz didn't really need a coach per se. But I was a sounding board, I think, and he's just done so well in each one of these circumstances. But I think it would revolve around the tension in those relationships, the struggles that come of being a part of an executive team, and the family dynamics, as you've described.
And Fritz, from your point of view, when you first started working with Dean, what were your expectations, and what's that experience been like for you?
Well, having known Dean for a number of years, I've always looked up to him as the wise person that he truly is. And so I was expecting him to wave the magic wand and me not have to do anything. But that's not what it
didn't work that way.
No, it doesn't work that way. No, all kidding aside, I mean, really, I was expecting him to give me that same perspective that I come in to give an owner, an objective view. Help me to look at it, at myself even, and how I'm interacting with people. How am I doing this? Or just being able to run the situation that I'm in, perhaps, by Dean, and then having that reflected back. And he is exceptional in the way that he just asks questions that help you think it or reframe it or to be able to. I've never, ever left a meeting with Dean in a coaching session with Dean, or even just informal meetings with Dean, that I didn't walk away and feel like I had something additional in my repertoire. So
One thing we talk about, and we've talked about in some of our other shows, is actually succession. And now, as a family outsider, have you been in a family business ever where they've wanted you to take on ownership of the company, even as an outsider? Or as a CFO, I'm sure you're privy to some of those conversations, or has that ever come up?
It has come up often. And usually, as I mentioned before, I come in when a company is for lack of a better term, at an inflection point. They've reached a certain stage. Typically, you know, the entrepreneur goes out, starts the company. He gets it to a certain level, and then it just can't seem to break through to the next level. And that's where something else, an outside force, has to act upon that body, in order, or otherwise it'll stay in the same motion. So you come in, you bring in additional information outside, or another observation, another way of doing it, a better way of doing it, if you will. And then they have the choice of either accepting that or not. And usually when I'm brought in, some promises are made that if the company gets to a certain level that we're all going to be able to benefit from it. And that hasn't happened yet. I'm still working on that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I've been in a number of situations where the owners have passed it on to their sons, and oftentimes you'll hear the saying that from shirt sleeves to shirt sleeves in three generations. The father builds it up, and the second son may improve it a little bit, and the third. Mm-hmm. It's not always this case, but there's enough mm-hmm. out there that it says that if there's not a clear view or clear vision of where this is supposed to be. As one owner used to have, he says, money isn't everything, but it keeps the kids connected. And so, you know, sometimes too much is given too fast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they're not required to pay their dues. And so.
Have you been designated or given the role of being a mentor to groom? Have they brought you in other instances, in addition to saying, you know, you're our CFO or COO and managing the business day to day, and we have this next generation, and do they put some of that onus on you?
Yes. I mean, that's always just kind of, and I'm bent that way anyway. I will speak into people's lives when they're not asking me for that. So, so yes, I've had a couple of situations where the father actually incentivized his son to not go to college because he wanted him there. And so I was asked to groom the son, and I actually counseled to let the son go to college and get him that at least under his belt. That didn't happen, but that's just kind of where you're at. You can say so much, and then you have to be flexible and say, you know, the ultimate choice is up to that person.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any, say, family resistance as it pertains, again, to succession with letting a family outsider actually have any part ownership in that company?
Yes, that is always a big deal. We don't want to let go. There's always that resistance that if we let anybody in and give up any piece of it, then we're ultimately going to lose it, rather than seeing that possibly that with ownership, there's a greater stake in the game. And I kind of liken it to my son when he was using mom's car for a long time. And then finally I said, okay, son, you're going to buy that car. That's your car. And the day that he bought it, he washed and cleaned it, cleaned out his side of the garage and put the car in there. I said, man, this is magical. So
your advice is loosen up a little bit if you want that outside executive to really, you know, contribute effectively mm-hmm. to the best of the abilities, have a little bit of skin in the game if possible.
Absolutely.
Not be afraid of that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I've been offered skin in the game when we were in an upside down situation, but that would have meant that I would have been borrowing,
yeah.
Buying into a lending situation. That right. was not really.
Not so attractive.
Right.
So
what's wrong with this picture?
So if you had an audience full of business owners here and could share your ideas of things that you have seen in your career where you know that you were not able to do as good a job as you could have done, given your expertise, you could see the possibilities, but things were happening that inhibited. What advice would you give them to help them not, because it's unintentional, but not to put those roadblocks in front of bringing in somebody of your caliber?
Yeah. No person is an island. We were created to work together. And when you have the right people in the right places, a good to great story, when you have the right people there and can build a team and a vision, have a clear vision, there's, the world is your oyster. You're unbounded in what you can do. Now, maybe you have market issues and those kinds of things that limit you, but still, when you have buy-in and ownership, you have that creative input that says, this is part of mine, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not just going to collect a paycheck. I never view it like that anyway, and I also believe that people come in the front door wanting to do a good job.
Exactly.
But too often we leave too much. We just pay them. You're just a paycheck. You're not paid to think here. I just want you to do this, and that's it. And yet there's so much that is in intellectual content that is still left on the table.
And, Dean, if you could face that audience and kind of act as a coach, how could you direct them or help them to, because it does become a trust issue again. So how mm-hmm. would you help them to give them the right kind of tools to be able to get the most out of their investment in this executive?
Yeah, I think you circle back to that central issue of trust. And mm-hmm. part of that, I think, is to really open up to the participative decision-making process. Mm-hmm. Because I think oftentimes human nature has it that I need to protect what I have and I trust myself more than I trust somebody else. But frankly, there's strength in numbers, right? And having somebody else's perspective. And it doesn't mean that you have to necessarily agree with them 100% of the time or make the same decisions, but to really open up the avenue of input and get the feedback that they oftentimes don't get in a family-run business, I think is extremely helpful.
It sounds like that works best with some kind of facilitation.
Well, certainly, particularly right off the bat, I think that's the case because it's not intuitive. It's something that, I taught at a conference not long ago, and we talked about how these principles, while they're apparent to us and you describe them, they sound right, they're just not intuitive. So to have somebody facilitate the process the first time or second time around to get things going there, to create a set of team operating principles that they can work off of can really help. Yes, so I agree with you.
You know, it's interesting I hear you say that because, of course, Meredith and I work very closely all the time with family-owned businesses. And one of the things I know is that they hesitate to bring in outside trusted advisors and things because they're afraid of, first of all, what's going to be put on the table, what outsiders are going to see. And another thing, I think, is they're afraid of the horror stories of the long-term involvement. And, they're always watching those pennies because they want to pour it back into the business, not into the people issues, but those are critical. So you just kind of talked through a scenario that sounded like this could be done without it's not a two-year commitment. It can be a facilitated process.
Yes.
Can you give them a better idea of what they might expect and so kind of take the fear away, if you will?
Sure. And frankly, I have just landed another client that is a family-owned business style, privately held, like Fritz has talked about. And what we said we would do is we wanted to start with an assessment process just to find out, hey, it's a way to fast track the relationship. And that actually gives you so much information. I can, by doing an assessment, learn 2 years of information on somebody by doing that. So that's something that helps fast track. The other part in this case is to then provide some group feedback to understand the strengths and struggles that different types of people bring to the table and then use that as a basis for facilitated discussions. And when I described this process to this company that just hired me, they were like, well, what is it going to take to get there? And when I shared with them what I thought it was going to cost them, they were like, oh, okay, yeah, well, let's start now. It's just not as much as you think it would be, and it's not a long-term affair. If a coach is a good coach, he's found a way to get in, deliver the information, and get out. It's never intended to be a perpetual type relationship.
great.
If with obviously corporate America, with unemployment being where it is, and I know in my practice I have a lot of senior execs that have come to me that recently lost a job, what would you say would be the characteristics that surround a senior exec that is considering going into a family business? What would that person look like?
Wow, that's a great question. That almost throws me off in a sense because – no, I mean that in a good way because that's such a good question. You know what it is? It's not unlike what Fritz described. It's being willing to do things that you never imagined yourself doing before. Now, if somebody's coming out of a larger corporate scenario to think about, well, gee whiz, there's no resources to do this, so I guess I'm it. And frankly, the reason Fritz shines so much in this, I think, is because of his Amish background. The guy was born with his sleeves rolled up. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I think it's making that transition to something potentially smaller and being willing. And, you know, the word here is really humbling. I mean, to humble yourself. Yeah. It sounds so hard to be able to swallow that, but to put aside some of your own ego issues to go into that environment, I really think that's what it requires. Yeah. That's kind of a hard message, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm sure, Pat, you have some take, too, being in executive search.
Yeah, exactly. We always look for somebody who's going to check their ego at the door.
Mm-hmm.
And Fritz, this is the other thing I always look for, and I'd love your insight on this. I say I'm always looking for somebody who's looking to make evolutionary changes, not revolutionary changes.
That's right.
What is your take on that from your experience?
Whoa, boy. When I think of revolutionary, I think of rebels.
Mm-hmm.
And typically, I think of an entrepreneur as somebody who rebelled against something out there, and they're usually the ones that go out there. They're forging out into I guess maybe one way to put it is I look at myself as someone who takes this guy who's got his head in the clouds. I grab a hold of his heels and kind of tie him to reality. Because if he doesn't have the resources to do it, it's just a kind of a realm out there. And they're, I mean, God help them. We need them. I mean, we especially need the entrepreneurial spirit now in this economy. And with a team of well-grounded professionals, I believe that we could turn this economy around quickly if we're allowed to do that.
Yeah, just not be afraid of that.
Right.
You know, many of our listeners have heard some of our other shows, and we had a topic on the show before last that dealt with conflict, and it happened to deal specifically with the divorce issue, but conflict in a family business. And, you know, one of the insights we talked about was how that's handled. It doesn't necessarily have to be a divorce, but any kind of disruption between the family and how that kind of impacts the rest of the organization. Have you had any experience with seeing some kind of conflict, how it's impacted? Because I think if somebody from the inside can share to our listeners, family business owners, the how that impacted them internally, it would be an eye-opener, because I know that in the heat of the moment, they're not recognizing that.
You said it correctly. The thought that I had while you were asking me this is that all of us, in all of our relational and interpersonal dealings, we never think of it as something abnormal,
mm-hmm.
until someone else comes and says, wow, what you guys are doing here or what you're saying is really warped, or it's not good for you. And I've been in a situation like that where it affects the entire organization. But for those who are in it, and have been in it for a long time, it's like the boiled frog syndrome. They just become immune to it,
mm-hmm.
and don't realize the way it takes away from the productivity of the work, and not only that, but the relational aspects of the rest of the employees that are there, how it permeates throughout the entire organization. And so, you know, having come into a situation like that, trying to stay distant from it and yet trying to improve it, and to speak truth in love,
mm-hmm.
Is really, you can't change people. You can only help, as you say, you know, you lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. But mm-hmm. what we used to say is, well, if you put salt in the food, it really makes him thirsty when they get to the water. So maybe that's what my job is to put some salt in the food so that when they get to the water, they can drink.
Mm-hmm. So, Dean, you talked about some of the great characteristics. So now, from, and that's great if I'm a listener thinking of, gee, maybe my next career move, maybe this is a great place. Maybe I do need better quality of life and I want a little bit better voice and things, and I like a challenge. So now if I'm a family business owner and I'm looking around and thinking, maybe I could use an outsider. Maybe I could use another opinion that isn't just the kids and my wife and or husband. From each of your perspectives, would you advise them in terms of what to, how to go about that and what to look for in that person?
Great question. I think the first rule of thumb is don't try and decide that one on your own, okay? Because 9 times out of 10, you have this pool of people that you're associated with, and some of them are going to be family members or whatever, and that's all a great thing. I mean, gee whiz, family business is really the bedrock of our country in so many ways. But I think it's important to really take an objective process of determining what it is that you really want, what kind of person is it that you really need. And human nature has it. We tend to like people that are just like us. But 9 times out of 10, when we hire somebody as a CEO that's just like us to fill some sort of an operational role or whatever, I mean, it really requires a totally different animal. So I think through the use of an objective process about what is it you need, what personality types work best in those scenarios? You know, are they entrepreneurial? Do they have the intestinal fortitude, so to say, to work and live in this environment based on your corporate goals and objectives? I think that goes a long way in finding the right people to come in from the outside.
Sounds like having a little clarity.
Absolutely. It's all about clarity.
It's been a hot topic on our shows. Fritz, how about from your perspective?
Well, you know, Dean was mentioning about assessments. Mm-hmm. In many ways, what that is to say you want to figure out where you are.
Right.
If you don't know where you are on the map, you could be go heading in the wrong direction. And so that very thing of figuring out who it is that you need, and then typically the entrepreneur is not the expert in this area, and so having experts come in and provide that that input to help them think about things that they weren't necessarily thinking about before, that's the key, I think.
Yeah. Let me give you an example of that. I worked with one organizational leader who decided he wanted to bring somebody in that could do more of the accounting bookwork. The person he chose, he had me assess after the fact. And what was so strange was that with one of the assessments I used, they have this prototype called the networker profile. So here's somebody that's very highly spontaneous on the opposite ends of the scale of being methodical and system-oriented, and that's who we hired to do that kind of work. I basically said, well, let's see how it goes, but I frankly don't see this working, and it was a matter of 2 months' time where he had to back out and redo, and it was painful for everybody.
Well, of course, the issue is that for most family businesses, they've not had to hire a senior executive. It is a very new frontier. They have hired or brought in their family. So to both your points, I guess kind of seeing it as not an inadequacy of not knowing. It's just they don't know.
Right.
I might one of the things that I've seen a number of times is that is the ego of, say, the CEO or owner who's there, who's afraid of being found out, that mm-hmm. he doesn't know everything.
Right.
When he has known everything up to now,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it's letting go or really accepting the fact that the world is a little bit bigger than what I've created it to be. And so letting go of that, just letting, I just say, if you're listening right now, I just say, let go of that.
Right.
If you want to get to the next level, let go of that.
Maybe we should give them the phone number of many public company CEOs and ask them if they think they have all the answers.
Well, I mean, that's exactly right. I've said this, use this analogy a number of times. If you have two CEOs or a round table of CEOs sitting there, you're going to pay more attention to the guy from, say, GM, who lost billions, than perhaps the privately held guy who's sitting there who made a couple of million, but he didn't have that P&L statement of a couple billion dollars. Maybe he had a $20 million company or a $10 million company. But if you made more, it's not what you make, it's what you get to keep that makes the difference.
That's right. There's plenty of stories on the Wall Street Journal that
exactly.
would indicate that somebody didn't have all the answers.
That's right.
So what I heard, Dean, for the business owner, have clarity, define the role, define the characteristics, And kind of don't be afraid. What I heard from you, which was a wonderful word that you used that I don't think I've heard from an executive, and that was grace. I like that term. I really get what you're saying. It goes with humility,
yes.
Humbleness, and leaving the ego outside. And I heard you talk about building relationships, which we all know is critical, but certainly yes. Important for the trust, and garnering the respect through grace.
Yes,
is that a good summation?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Yes.
That's really great. Meredith, did you have anything?
Yeah, well, I was going to say I think we should get our wonderful meaty tips from our two great guests. Every week we try to ask our guests to give us three tips that really summarize advice that you would give to, you know, the family business owner out there. And for that matter, go ahead and include the senior exec, the family outsider. But what three key things, Dean, would you say that you would tell people out there?
Well, first of all, we've talked about this subject of conflict, and I think that it happens in unusual ways, particularly in the family business context where you have these other relationships. My first tip would be this: engage in healthy conflict. But what usually happens is we get into difficult conversations, we bring emotions to the table, and we have very difficult interpersonal transactions. But what's even worse than that is to have no conflict whatsoever. And frankly, when that happens, you got issues that are under the table, nobody's talking, everybody's feeling something, but nobody's really saying that at all. So to find the good and healthy side of conflict and make sure that that's healthy inside your organization. The second thing I would say is to really make effective use of your resources. And by that, it's this whole concept of identifying the right roles and responsibilities, matching the right people to those roles, and making sure that that everybody's clear about what's expected of them, that you have those documented job descriptions, and in concert with that, that you're truly utilizing professional management skills. And again, these are things that don't come naturally. That'd be my third thing, to really focus on professional management skills compared to the amateur manager. And all of these really work together, I think, in creating a healthy succession process, because sooner or later, the head of that organization is going to have to hand the reins off. And we know that in corporate America, they can spend 10, 15, 20 years. You hear the Jack Welch's of the world. I mean, spend a lot of time in that succession process. Some of these pieces, in my mind, would be the components of having an effective handoff with the right people and hopefully continuing to grow the business. Here's how I see it. To the degree that I've talked to family-owned businesses, they think that the real nest egg to build is the value of the business. And when I say that's not true, what's important to build is the value of your personal estate. And the way that you do that is through creating ownership scenarios, that you have a sufficient handoff process, and that really what you're funding is your estate and not just the business. So it's a longer-term view, right? And the longer-term our perspective, the better our current decision-making.
Excellent.
Great. And Fritz?
Well, I'd have the tips for both the executive and for the owner. The first one would be for executive coming into or contemplating a family-run business is, number one, be flexible. Really, truly be flexible. Things are not as structured. That's why you're there. And for the owner, the counter side of that is, let go of control. Let go. Let go of control. Let go. Sometimes when you're, I've been in situations where they don't have an idea what a CFO is supposed to do or a COO is supposed to do because they've always done it. Well, I did it this way. Well, let go of your way of doing it. It may not be the best way of doing it, or you may be able to accomplish it still, and then you've brought the rest of the organization along with it. So be flexible and let go. For the executive, I'd say be focused. In a smaller family-run organization, it's real easy to get caught up in all of the other different hats, all the different relationships, but stay focused. And for the owner, I would say provide clarity. Provide the vision for the organization, because oftentimes it's, yes, I know where we're going. Yeah, excuse me, but you've got the rest of the team here that doesn't know where you're going, so provide clarity. And finally, build the relationships. I'd say that for both of them. You're both responsible for building that relationship, 100%, both of you. If I'm talking to the executive, I'd say you're 100% responsible for this relationship. If I'm talking to the owner, I'd tell them the same thing.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you so much. It's a great discussion. Hopefully shed a lot of light for our listeners. For those of you who are listening or who come to our site later, you can always download this podcast will be on our site. You can find it at familybusinessradio.businessradiox.com. You'll also find the contact information for our guests. But, Dean, if you want to share your phone and business information.
Thank you. My website is www.internalinnovations.com. That's internalinnovations.com. And, of course, on the website, there's a way to connect with me with an email link, or you can dial my phone, which is 770-783-2765.
Thank you. And Fritz?
I'll give you my home email address and phone number, since I don't want to mix up the two.
Absolutely.
My cell, you can reach me at 770-617-2716. And my email address is fslabach, that's fschlabach, @comcast.net.
Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.